Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's a pleasure to follow such an interesting training program in Nepal around MVA. I'm going to present some work here in the U.S. around MVA. Interesting to see some of the patterns in challenges and in successes. So I first want to thank my co-authors on this work, Deb Vanderhey, Marcia Weaver, Nancy Stevens, and Sarah Prager, all at the University of Washington. I like to break down the problem into the health problem and the science problem. Usually we have a little bit, we need to understand both of those. And then today I'll introduce the Residency Training Initiative in Miscarriage Management, talk a little bit about the program itself, and then present some of our process evaluation data. So just very briefly, our project focuses on family medicine. So miscarriage management evidence does not match current practice. Standard of care remains operating room management, even for early uncomplicated miscarriage. Family medicine residents are not routinely trained in office-based uterine aspiration for miscarriage, despite recommendations, and it's well within the family medicine scope of practice to perform this type of office-based procedure. So the health problem is pretty straightforward. Moving on to the science problem is really practice change. And practice change theory is heavily influenced by diffusion of innovations theory, which posits that it's not just your intervention or your training, but it's really things about the innovation itself, then about your dissemination strategy or the intervention that you're using, and then also about your target audience and your user system. And to really diffuse an innovation, you need to address all three levels. And practice change also fits within the broader framework of translational research and implementation science, which most of you are probably familiar with, and basically how to encourage the systematic uptake of evidence-based practices. So we know to make this happen that passive approaches, which is the classic didactic lecture, is usually ineffective. That interactive and mixed approaches can sometimes impact practice. That clinical evidence is necessary but not sufficient for practice change to happen. And that interventions must address barriers and facilitators to change at the system or site or even individual level. So with all that in mind, the Residency Training Initiative in Miscarriage Management seeks to expose family medicine residency, faculty residents, and support staff to office-based uterine evacuation for miscarriage. And this includes training faculty and residents in MVA, and then training clinical administrative support staff and all the other really important work they do to support patient care, things like triage, assisting with the procedure, patient counseling, and support. Briefly, the program is based on what we know about practice change. The RTIMM is multidimensional, uses a systems approach. It delivers several intervention doses, and it's tailored to specific sites. So session one is pretty much out of the box the same for each site, and it includes a didactic and a hands-on using a papaya simulator model, and some discussion sessions that work on values clarification, thinking through system change at the site, and perceived barriers and hopes for implementation. This is focused on physicians, and support staff are encouraged to attend as well. Sessions two and three are focused on support staff and are developed based upon what the team has learned during session one. And so there, that might include things like doing a mock clinic or a patient flow exercise, how to support the patient, how to process POC and blood products, billing, equipment, all the sort of nitty-gritty things that need to happen. In Washington State, there are 10 civilian family medicine residency sites, and they all participated. Over 2 years, it was rolled out, and you can see the numbers of folks trained, and then you can note that we were able to capture even administrative support staff, which was, they were the hardest to capture, but we were able to get them. We're doing a mixed method impact and process evaluation to evaluate the entire program, and today I'm just presenting a piece of our process evaluation. So basically in the process evaluation, we want to know how did it work. We want to identify facilitators and barriers to implementation, and we were also interested, can MVA be normalized as part of primary care? To us, that seemed like a key piece of whether this was going to really become part of practice, is whether it could be considered part of primary care services that family medicine physicians are providing. We conducted follow-up interviews with participant volunteers, and had 36 of them. And again, we're able to capture a nice range of roles. And again, the administrative support staff were the hardest to capture. But we were able to pin some of them down. And unfortunately, there's not enough time today to really present actual qualitative data. So I'm going to just cut to the chase with some patterns and themes that we've seen. But I do want to alert you that we are presenting some results about the intersection of abortion services and miscarriage services on Wednesday morning, and there we'll have a little more time to unpack some of the actual data, which are always really interesting to see. I'll start with barriers. And we wanted to separate out implementation and normalization. We saw that normalization was a big facilitator to implementation, as you might imagine, but it wasn't always necessary, so we kind of wanted to look at these things separately. So a big barrier for most sites was low volume, and therefore that it's difficult to train the competency in this procedure if you're only doing miscarriage spontaneous abortion cases. Turnover, whether that was leadership, whether that was the usual turnover you expect in a residency site of the residents, or whether it was support staff. And triage and scheduling remained a barrier for quite a few sites. How do you fit this unplannable procedure into your plan? In family medicine, they're really able to plan most encounters with patients, and this one just pops up and is not, you can't plan for it. And in terms of normalization, we did hear from participants about discomfort with procedures in general. Some of these sites were more procedurally oriented than others. Some didn't do very many procedures at all, let alone procedures that involved blood and dealing with blood products and products of conception. So that was a barrier to normalization for some sites. Scope of practice, and this is a perception about scope of practice being a barrier, a perception that OB colleagues wouldn't be on board with them doing this, and was a barrier for some. So that became a barrier to normalizing it as part of primary care. And also values about sexuality and miscarriage, a perception of miscarriage as too emotional. We heard a lot about that, and discomfort with interacting with patients. And perceptions about patient preferences. Would patients want to be seen in an outpatient setting? Would women rather be in the OR under general anesthesia? That fed into a perception of whether folks could see this as a normal procedure in primary care. But turning to things that helped, we found that, and these are really mostly things that are supported by the literature, so it's nothing new, but it's kind of nice to see it all fit together, that networks were key. We worked within an existing family medicine residency network in Washington State, and then as we worked with sites, sometimes you could kind of see those internal networks and leverage those, and that seemed to help. We heard from participants that the systems approach was very helpful, how to do it, not just what it is, but how are we going to do this. We heard from a lot of participants about how important the inclusion of support staff in training was, and that that was not how training usually happened for anything at their site, and that they found that to be innovative and also very helpful to actually implementing the service. Finding a core team. The decision, some sites wanted to train everybody and some sites said, well, really we should train people who are interested in providing this service, so let's choose a few core people and really get them up to speed, and that seemed to be a good approach for implementation. And ongoing learning or training plans. These are residency sites. They all had different, the sort of ongoing learning was different at each site, I guess, sort of how that happened. But some sites, for example, we've heard from participants that once they managed a case, they did a debrief, what went well with the case, what didn't do well, what could we do better next time, and that kind of ongoing learning, sites that were able to do that had a better chance, were better with implementation. And finally, clarity on abortion versus miscarriage, and this is some from, in terms of the training and achieving clarity on MVA is the same procedure for induced or spontaneous abortion. We're here today to talk about miscarriage, and part of the training is going to be deciding whether pregnancy is viable or not. So that kind of clarity. And also clarity from the site. We heard from participants about a fear about a slippery slope. Are we going to be doing abortions next if we're doing this now? And sites that had very clear policies on abortion, usually anti-abortion policies, we do not and we will never do abortions here, were actually able to implement miscarriage services without too much problem from support staff, residents, or faculty. So that was kind of an interesting finding. And we also found that some values that we in the training held that we were able to share with our sites helped with normalization. Things like a value of quality, improving quality of care, using a patient-centered care framework. These values resonated with sites and helped them normalize this procedure as part of primary care. Continuity of care is a value in family medicine, so that also resonated. And their self-image as teaching sites, as residency sites, and as being committed to using evidence-based medicine. We found those shared values helped with normalization. A dedicated site champion, good leadership, is of course not surprisingly very important to implementation, especially a leader who was familiar with MVA or had previous experience, a leader who was interested in working as a team with support staff, and a leader who was dedicated to setting cultural norms and sort of changing the cultural norm at the site. We do this now. It was just one brief quote we heard from two participants about how their site champions kind of kept things going. And also a couple sites, there was a perception of patient need, which was quite a motivator. For the uninsured and low-income patients, some sites said this is going to be great for our patients who don't have insurance and who pay out of pocket if we don't have to send them to the operating room. So that came in a little bit. So some implications of this work. First of all, for us, right away, programmatically, the findings are relevant to ongoing refinement and program expansion. This project has now expanded into several other states and is actually also expanding beyond family medicine to include OBGYN and advanced practice clinicians. And sort of larger implications, we're hoping we'll make a contribution to work around practice change theory interventions and to look at the feasibility of miscarriage as a context introduced uterine evacuation skills. I want to acknowledge our many funders. The project implementation in Washington was funded by the Department of Health and by the Abortion Access Project, and our evaluation work has been funded by ARC and by the Clinical Translational Science Awards and by the Ryan Residency Training Program. And those are papayas going to Alaska. They have to be hand carried in the airplane. And that's all I have, and that's just Sarah Prager up in the corner and some papaya workshop participants.
Slippery slope mm-hmm. finding, which is really interesting. I mean, mm-hmm. some in the abortion rights movement have thought that training in miscarriage management would help facilitate at least some providers' interest in providing abortion care. And I don't know, do you have any thoughts about
right.
that?
Right. So we also, that's something that we're interested in. And on the one hand, we ride a tension with this project because on the one hand, the quality of care for miscarriage in this country is just really not very good. So we are really dedicated to improving quality of care for miscarriage. And we're interested in getting uterine aspiration skills out there where they aren't usually. So we sort of ride that tension ourselves. So that finding in one way is like, okay, great, if that's what it takes to improve quality of miscarriage, we'll take it. But we also, then it makes us rethink how useful this is as a strategy to introduce abortion services. Although we have also identified residents and faculty who are interested in abortion training through these trainings, who have then contacted the trainers directly, and we've been able to hook them up. So in a way, it opens the discussion in that way. But in terms of, are we going to get these sites to provide abortion services? I don't think that's going to be part of this project, yeah. Yes? So this project isn't about training to competency, and that's the biggest barrier we hear from our sites, is how are we ever going to train to competency, because we get, if we're lucky, we're going to have 20 cases a year. And of those, some women are going to choose medication management, some expectant, we might end up with 10 surgical cases. So we have set up, as the project has grown, ways for interested individuals to get more training, and this kind of feeds back to the abortion question as well, because we say to folks, really, if you want to achieve competency, if you're willing to go to an abortion clinic, that's where you can achieve competency in this procedure. And some people are interested, some are willing, and some are not willing. We kind of have these different levels of interest. And so that's been a nice way to get people in the door of an abortion clinic who have never been there, see procedures, and start training to competency. But the hope is really to get the faculty, since these are residency sites, get the faculty trained to competency, and then have it be built in as something that they're doing. Not all these folks are going to train to competency, and our hope is that really they'll be able to counsel women and at least lay all the options for miscarriage care on the table when they talk with women.
I'm not completely aware of the Washington state laws in terms of requirements for registration and infrastructure that is needed to provide urban evacuation procedures. But do you anticipate that's going to be a barrier? Because some of the states require, you know, blood banking facilities or water facilities. Do you see that as a potential barrier to making this as an office procedure?
Yep, that's a good question. I am not the person on our team who's an expert on all the regs like that, but I do know that right, this is in Washington State now, this is perfectly acceptable to do as an office procedure, and lots of OBGYNs are doing it as an office procedure. As the legislative attack on abortion services goes that route, sort of regulating out of existence, then the definitions of an induced and spontaneous abortion, of course, become very important. But in Washington State right now, that's not a problem. Any other questions? All right, thank you very much.